Welcome to the Find Your Leadership Confidence Podcast with Vicki Nethling. You are about to discover impactful lessons that help you grow as an individual, grow your confidence, and find the positive and good within you, so you powerfully and authentically become the best version of yourself. Be sure you visit our website at www.findyourleadershipconfidence.com. While you're there, subscribe to us via your favorite network. Now tune in, get ready, and enjoy the journey of emerging as a leader of exception in the 21st century.
Welcome, everyone, to the Find Your Leadership Confidence Podcast. I'm your host, Vicki Nethling, coming to you from Roswell, Georgia. The goal of this podcast is to bring topics and guests that will empower you to become that confident leader and take your business and your life to the next level. Today, I am excited to share with you my guest, Deborah Crowe. And let me tell you about Deborah. Deborah is an executive and business coach, and she has over 30 years of global experience in the top Fortune 500 companies in Canada, the United States, Europe, Asia, and Australia. Leading and coaching C-suite leaders, executive professional teams, and business, change management, human resource onboarding, diversity and inclusion practices, assessing and integrating high performance teamwork, increasing personal skills, resilience, and agile behaviors, as well as emotional intelligence and disrupting habits from a cognitive standpoint. She started and has been a CEO of her company for over 30 years and knows how to get to the top, hold that senior position, and balance a career and family, and support to help create meaningful changes in their lives of those she supports and those that encounter her. She prides herself on leading a heart-centered leader who thrives on helping people become successful and fulfilled. So of course, we're going to talk about heart-centered leadership, which is so aligned with what I talk about, leading from the heart, the head, and the hands. Please join me in welcoming my guest, Deborah Crowe. Deborah, so nice to have you as our guest today.
Thanks so much for having me, Vicki.
So please share with us, since you seem to be a global personality, what part of the country, though, do you call home? Where do you live?
I live in Canada.
Toronto, East Coast, West Coast, where are you living?
I'm smack dab in the middle between Toronto and Detroit, Michigan, in a city called London, the other London.
Yes. I spent a good bit of time in Toronto, and it's Trafalgar, something like that.
Trafalgar? Yes,
I spent some time there with one of my contacts that was living in that area and was kind enough to, while I was working there, have me over for dinner a few times. So
nice
area. So we always like to hear a little bit of a backstory. We gave your impressive accolades and things, but how did you, Deborah, go from where, you know, that college student to this career, this life that you have today?
Well, there's always a story, right? Mm-hmm. I actually was in university and my second year, and my dad passed away.
So
21, I had to stop going to school. And that's the day my emotional resilience was born, because I had no choice. I had to support myself. So I decided, as a young student and only had experience from working for the family business, that I was going to go work for a temp agency and get lots of experience across multiple sectors, which I did for 3 years. And the frustrating thing for me was I'd get to the end of the probation and I'd have a female leader looking across the desk and say, "It's just not working." And I'd come in early, I'd stay late. I was a team player. I was a listener. I was all the things. And it was the last company that I was at when I was just about to turn 24. And the VP asked me out for lunch. And I was really apprehensive to go because I'd had a previous VP do something inappropriate at the previous employer. Mm-hmm. but my intuition told me to go. So I went and he leaned over the table and he said, look at me and listen, you're losing your job at 5 o'clock. So I'm now turning on the heels of turning 24. I'm still grieving my dad. I'm just trying to do the best I can to survive. And he said, it's not your fault. He said, you have a female leader who doesn't want to foster your leadership skills because she looks at you and she's unhappy. So a month later, I started my company and I got headhunted. And my first client was the Australian Department of Defense. So wow. It was just very serendipitous. So I worked in tech and taught at the local college, Dawson Unix, because nobody knew how to work those operating systems before Windows came along. And I was all self-taught. And then along the way, over the next 6 years, I got married. I had a couple of little girls. And then I returned to university. And I was originally going to be an occupational therapist. I landed up doing my degree in disability management. And I opened a clinic and I did neurotrauma rehab for 23 years.
Wow.
And then the shifting point out of the medical world for me was an adjudicator called and she said, I have 5 executives on stress claims, short-term disability claims. Can you help us? And I was like, oh, what a welcoming reprieve. I don't have to testify in court. I don't have to write big medical reports. Little did I know my life was going to change in the next 10 months.
Wow.
I lost all of those executives. There was 3 VPs and 2 C-suites. I talk about them every day. I lost them all to cancer and they all landed up at our local hospice where I volunteered. And there was just all these serendipitous intersections. And then I remember my coach saying to me, what are you going to do with this gift? And I had a clinic, I had 5 staff, and now I'm really grieving, such a trigger memory to my dad and yeah. all the things, because grief is messy and certainly not linear. And a year and a half later, I moved into executive and leadership coaching. And here I am 15 years later.
Wow, what a story. So you know, I've had female executives where or leaders that held me back, but I have had more male than female for the long time. And I always was kind of chastised by the males because I led too much with my heart. You know, you just take things, you get too involved, you take it too personal. And it wasn't until I realized, though, that my teams were thriving and that and I went to college at 47 online while I traveled all over the U.S. And I realized after I went through college that, oh, gosh, I do know something. And I had the confidence to say, no more am I going to listen to you men. So talk to me about how someone becomes a heart-centered leader.
I've been a heart-centered leader since I was 8 years old. And it was instilled by my Irish Nana. And she taught me something so pivotal that I never forgot it at 8. I mean, think about age 8. Social development's done. You're not quite pre-adolescent. It's such a sweet time and space in our life. And she said, you can always be nice and you can always control yourself. Other people aren't going to like your light, but that doesn't mean you have to dim it. So I align with you as a professional to say I was held back by female bosses. And it was my last mentor, Steve McClure, that said, go do your own thing. And then I consistently had more male clients than female. And I think we need to shift that. And there's a great call to action I'll leave for homework on this question. Have your listeners Google tall poppy syndrome, because that is what I experienced. And that can come from men or women. The gender doesn't matter. And it's when someone looks at you and you're a bright light of positivity. And I was told I was too happy, too gregarious, too smiley, too laughy, yes. like all the things. And I just kept that inside of me and kept in my lane and kept going, because the kinder I was, success always came to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, my Nana also taught me that you never burn a bridge, because you will cross back over that and you don't want to get caught in a lie or a bad situation. Being nice is easy, and you don't need initials after your name to do it.
Awesome. It's so funny. You know, just as you said about your Nana, and I was with both my grandparents most of my childhood through, most of my early adulthood. But I think that the person that really, really set what my character would be like from a heart-centered perspective was I used to volunteer as a young girl at the place where our school nuns lived. And there was one particular nun who ended up leaving that religious life, but she was a light, just as you're saying. And she never, ever got people to do things by, you know, as I always say, with a hammer. And that was probably one of my biggest influences. And I hadn't thought of that for so long. But yeah, that's really interesting. So what traits make you a heart-centered leader?
Well, I created a heart-centered leadership sketch note at the beginning, well, 2 months before COVID, actually. I was chatting with a friend of mine in India. His name's Tanmay Vora. And I was saying to him, I would like to take this collective top 20 traits and turn it into a sketch note. And he said, let's do it. And I mean, it's certainly not an exhaustive list, but it's traits like attentive listening, being an avid reader, being able to model self-care, failing forward, being trustworthy, approachable. Those are just, you know, a few. And that little sketch note is now translated into 25 languages, and we're on the heels of it being downloaded 100,000 times. And we just give it away. Here's the link, go download it, find your language. It's just, now I see it as a vehicle that is just helping to heal the world. And people can say, it's okay to be this in leadership, because you look at business acumen, Vicky, and you need knowledge, skills, and ability. How can you not be heart-centered and compassionate if you don't have knowledge, skills, and ability? So why this has never been inserted or injected into business acumen boggles me. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to my business and who I am as a leader and a female leader, it's hugely injected. It's the foundation.
Yeah. That just makes me think of the saying that I'm sure many people have heard. It's just business. It's not personal. But, you know, for me, I had to build relationships to understand the people that worked with me and for me, to be able to have them grow and develop into all that they could be. Sometimes people don't recognize, you know, for me, I did have a mentor whenever I was in my late 30s that was, a very high up C-suite person, and he saw something more in me and believed in me way before I did. And I think that's where, you know, it comes from, that you, for me, always, whenever I help people, I feel so much, I guess, more satisfied than when I achieve my own goals. And it's kind of crazy like that. But I think that's what it's all about. It's like whenever your kids make milestones, how you feel about that. And we should, as heart-centered leaders, I think, look at how we treat our kids too, especially how are you at work and how are you at home? What kind of person you are, because a heart-centered leader is not only in the office. What transferable skills do you bring from your disability medical case management practice that now helps you as an executive coach?
Oh, the case manager shows up every day. You know, the sector doesn't matter because we're all in the people business. So the two biggest transferable skills, which are really pertinent, especially in the medical world, is trust and rapport.
Yeah.
If I don't have trust and rapport, I have no connection. And my definition of heart-centered leadership is honoring your connection and there's no room for reciprocity. So empathy, attentive listening, being approachable, there's no judgment. I'm there to help you. I'm not there to fix you. I'm there to listen. And really having the skills of empathy, not sympathy, to listen, not to respond, and just holding that space. Because we don't have to be, you know, in a medical situation. You look at the mental health crisis we have now, and people are listening, but they're always not present. And people can tell when you're not listening and your mind is somewhere else, or you pull your cell phone out and check it. You know, giving someone your full attention and space, and also knowing when to just listen, and maybe there isn't a response needed. And I find the millennial generation are so good at that. You know, they'll say to their manager or direct leader, I just need to vent and I'm not looking to have any advice or have you fix me. And I love that they have that forthright of fierce, I don't even know what to call it. It's just they're so in tune with their emotional intelligence and they know what they want and they're not afraid to ask for it. And I think that's powerful.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So how does one lead during a difficult time in leadership? You know, we always, it is a roller coaster that we go through. So how do we lead during those difficult times?
Well, I think we can use COVID as an example. 8 weeks into COVID, a lot of my leaders were panicking. And it's not like we all had a file sitting digitally, you know, in a fodder file or in our filing cabinet that said global crisis with a checklist. You have to embrace your vulnerability, your imperfection, and you need to leave space to unlead. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to tell your people from the top of the organization, the top of the org chart, I don't know, but here's the information that I have right now and in this time frame. And that vulnerability further augments that trust and rapport. And I think it gave C-suites an opportunity to stop and pause and really look at how they are as an inner leader, modeling their own self-compassion, their own self-care, taking space, you know, moving things around with routine, getting rid of wasting time. But the biggest thing I saw was how people managed their energy, because it was a bit of a panic stricken, if you will. Mm-hmm. I have a dear friend who's 99 years old, and she said, I didn't think I'd be seeing this at the end of my life. And, you know, here's someone who's gone through, you know, the plague and diphtheria and the Great Depression and all the things. And this was more gigantic than all of them, and the world didn't know what to do. So it was just neat to look at that. But I believe if we stay in what I call a place of equanimity, defined by mental calmness and composure, I think we can handle anything that comes our way, because it's like shining that light, that other question. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We can always control how we respond, how we act. And sometimes we just have to listen. It doesn't mean we have to act and fix things and know the next step, because we certainly didn't for 2 years.
Yeah. That really kind of reminds me to whenever I was raising my kids as well as my grandkids, whenever something was bad happening or whatever, and you, if no one was around, might have acted a little bit more stressed, a little bit more agitated or frustrated, but that little person is looking up at you, and all of a sudden the calming happens. Not for everybody, but for me, that's whenever I realized, okay, I can't have this little person see that I'm afraid or scared. And I think, you know, that's whenever you're in a difficult situation at your office or your business, you've got to be that person. And it does take a lot of courage, which I always say is directly tied to becoming confident.
Absolutely. And I became a new Nana in the middle of COVID. And, you know, it's interesting when you hold your grandchild for the first time, and it brought me right back to the first time I was a mom. And it's such a a feeling you can't even explain. You can't even exude it. It's just, yeah,
the
it's very
best
special.
Yet.
It is. It is.
So what's your experience and perspective for heart-centered leadership at the executive and C-suite level? Because I'm happy that you have experiences, because a lot of the C-suite people I knew aren't really heart-centered. So I would love to hear more about that.
Well, I'm gonna lean back into talking about when I was a disability manager. So when I was a disability manager, corporate wellness was mitigating those short-term disability claims. Let's get these people back to work. I don't want my insurance premiums to go up. Now, post-COVID, corporate wellness is employee retention. So when you think about the C-suite and the business acumen that they bring, the knowledge, skills, and ability, they need to look at their habits of power, which is SQ, and delegation and influence, which falls under IQ. But what about commitment and creativity, which is CQ? And then if we look at their EQ, it's the most important. It's their honesty, their attitude, and their achievement. And at the end of the day, in the middle of any kind of Venn diagram of business acumen, let's intersect it with a heart, because the B2B has to go, because COVID has pushed us to be human to human. It's H to H now, and the C-suite having the desire to be different, because if they don't create and sustain a healthy, vital culture, they're going to have an employee retention problem. And we're seeing it globally. People aren't putting up with not nice leaders anymore.
Right.
Our talent pool has become a puddle.
Yeah. The comments that I always hear are as if there's not that many people. We still have as many people out there, but they're being more selective. We had time to think about what we really want and what we need. And so business has to change. And I think that's why you and I do what we do.
Absolutely. And you know what? You cannot be at the transformational leadership level. And if you are and you're not heart-centered, then you need to come back to the bottom of that. I call it a heart-centered diagram. And you need to learn how to be a heart-centered leader, because the way of being not a nice leader is not where we are present day. And it's certainly not where companies are forging forward. And companies that have those healthy, vital cultures have heart-centered leaders at the helm. And they put their people before the profit. Because if you don't honor your people, you're not going to meet your KPIs, your metrics, and all your extrinsic values of fiduciary whatever. That fraction needs to be inverted. It needs to be people over profit, for sure.
Yeah. And the thing that I always get frustrated by is that whenever I started in my careers, I always had either self-development or at my training, at my office training available. And then, as you said, the profit was driving, okay, well, training is not bringing in any revenue, so let's just cut that out. So now you have all these people that get promoted for their tactical skills or technical skills and not their EQ or their people skills. And that's where you start to have people that are not great and leadership. So we need to get back to the point where we have that training. It's a lunch and learn to teach you to be heart-centered is only a drip towards that goal, because it is a behavior change for some people.
Absolutely. There's a lot of emerging accidental leaders, and it's like your story. Somebody saw something in you. Those people need to be mentored and fostered and not thrown into, because I land up coaching them myself and they're like, I just want to go back to my lab. I just want to go back to my data. You can't just say, I see something in you and pluck them in. It has to be a gentle transition. Yeah.
It was early on whenever I worked for a fast food company, and I was in operations, but they had me do a personality study for each of the new hires for management as well as managers in place, but the changeover of their staff, because a lot of times because they were firing a lot of people, and the question was, why are you firing the right people? And it was very eye-opening for me to see that there are some people that really, unless they make a change, are just not going to ever be a great manager because they don't have those people skills. You know, as you said, I'd rather stay in the lab in front of my computer. My computer doesn't ask me stupid questions or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think as managers and as business owners, we need to think about that, you know, really understand that it isn't just a butt in the seat, but for you to retain good, loyal employees, you need to make them feel that they're important and understand why.
Absolutely. Yeah. H to H.
Yeah. So it's time for my question about you have a women's self-care conference series, and I wanted to know a little bit more about that for the audience.
It's so funny. Everyone's been talking about this lately, and I feel like we were so ahead of the curve. So back in 2018, I noticed a lot of my female clients and even friends and family members were just struggling with self-care. And I always got joked that I was the queen of self-care. And I put together a self-care conference, and we had our first one in Toronto, and it sold out quite quickly. And then in 2019, we took it across Canada. We went out to Western Canada and Eastern Canada, and the same thing, they were selling out. And then I had it in my own city, and we sold out on the pre-sale. And I was like, okay, we really need to keep this going. And then COVID hit. Mm-hmm. So we haven't resurrected it. It's on my wheelhouse. In my wheelhouse, I've had lots of requests. It's just a day to show women, regardless of your position title, whether you're a stay-at-home mom or you work, how do you foster and manage the inner leader? Mm-hmm. And, you know, our tagline was self-care isn't selfish. And it's so funny now, over the last 6 years, this has popped up everywhere, but it's become so predominant since COVID, because I think a lot of people, it was a renewal that we have to look after ourselves. For me, it's been a lifelong journey. I lost my dad when he was 54. I'm now in my 50s. That's pretty young. I lost my brother at 43, and I've lost a friend. And so to me, we have to live each day. And in order to do that, we have to have self-care in our daily schedule, and it's non-negotiable.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that's why I tie my anti-aging and wellness to my business, because I think you cannot be impactful in anything you do if you don't first take care of you.
Absolutely.
You know, you can't have the stamina to get up on stages and or lead workshops. And, you know, and again, I have those grand boys. I have to be able to chase after them and do fun things with them. And I have seen so many people that forget about living after they retire. So, you know, for me, no, that's not the way I'm going to go out. Well, it's been wonderful chatting with you. So it's time now for me to share my screen, and that will have the contact information. If you all have been really intrigued and interested in learning more about what Deb Crowe is all about, I'm going to share her contact information. So if you're just listening, you know, you should run quickly, get that paper pencil. Of course, everything will be on my YouTube channel, Vicki Nethling. Please subscribe. And also the findyourleadershipconfidence.com website. So Deb makes everything easy for you. Her website is debcrowe.com. That's Deb Crowe, CROWE.com. On LinkedIn, Deb Crowe. Pinterest is heart-centered leadership. Search that. Twitter is over 40 wisdom. And YouTube is at imperfect the heart-centered. And again, heart-centered is hyphenated. If you just search that, you'll find it. And I'm going to turn it over now to Deborah to be able to talk to you about her call to action. So Deb, go ahead.
So my call to action is I'm going to share my link with your listeners for the Heart-Centered Leadership poster, because it is in 25 languages. We've got the top 25 languages around the globe, and that gives people a baseline to start of how can I start to be a heart-centered leader. And I just wrote the Heart-Centered Leadership Playbook and released that November 1st.
And awesome.
The serendipitous moment was it went to number one on Amazon in healthcare. So that medical world has never let me go, Vicki.
No, it has not. All righty. Well, Deborah, it has been just wonderful chatting with you. You and I are so much aligned. We'll have to find some way that we can meet each other in Canada or in the US. It would be awesome. But as always, I want to thank you for being such a great guest today.
Well, thanks for having me. It was a great conversation.
Yes. And as always, I remind everyone that life is a journey and it's up to you to enjoy the ride. This is Vicki Nethling signing off.
Thank you for tuning into the Find Your Leadership Confidence Podcast with Vicki Nethling, where we share impactful lessons that help you grow as an individual, grow your confidence, and find the positive and good within you so you powerfully and authentically become the best version of yourself. Remember to visit our website at www.findyourleadershipconfidence.com and enjoy even more great episodes like this one. Again, while you're here, subscribe to us via your favorite network. We look forward to seeing you next time on the Find Your Leadership Confidence Podcast.